Part 1. The War to End All Wars, 1914 to 1918. Lo, thy dread empire, chaos, is restored. Light dies before thy uncreating word. Thy hand, great anarch, lets the curtain fall, and universal darkness buries all. Alexander Pope. Chapter 1. From Flight to Fight. April 1st, 1915. Dixmude, Belgium. Cold. It was cold and wet. The French pilot shivered in his sodden leather flying jacket, his shoulders hunched against the damp, chill air. Wriggling his icy toes against the rudder bar to restore a little blood flow, he decided the goggles were nearly useless. They were fogged over on the inside and fuzzy with rain on the outside, so he shoved them up and squinted through the wet air. He opened the narrow throttle lever, and the 80-horsepower Gnome rotary engine roared. As he eased the stick back, the big tail surfaces bit into the thick air, and the aircraft's nose came up. Wiping his streaming face, the pilot tugged the goggles down and stared through the spinning propeller, willing the clouds to disappear. Gray tendrils slipped over the wings as the little monoplane slowly climbed, motor straining to push it through the opaque clouds. Roland Garros muttered, blinking against the blowing wind. Normally, the French aviator could hunch down behind the windscreen and at least have a dry face, but not today. Smiling a bit, he reached up and touched the wooden grip of the machine gun bolted in front of him. No rifle or pistol today, and no flare gun. That had been funny. Imagine shooting at another flying machine with a flare pistol. He'd even heard that another pilot had trailed a grapnel behind an aircraft trying to snag a German. Last week, two of the Boche had taunted Garros, and he was still infuriated. The observer had actually stood up in the back seat and grabbed his crotch before they'd flown away laughing. But not today. Teeth gleaming against his dark, wet skin, the pilot smiled. Today, he had a surprise for them. He patted the weapon again, then tucked his hand back inside to keep warm. The Hotchkiss Model 1907 was a French infantry machine gun, heavy and short-barreled, but he'd managed to fasten it on his machine in such a way that the Germans would never suspect a thing. He hoped. As his Morin Saulnier passed 1,500 meters, Garros broke into the brilliant April sunlight over Belgium. Off to the west, he could see darker gray patches of water through breaks in the clouds. He'd flown over the English Channel before the war, and the Mediterranean also. He shivered and hunched down deeper into the leather coat. Why not fight in a warm place? This war had been going on for 8 months now and showed no sign of ending soon. Christmas, they'd said. It would be finished by Christmas. Here it was April already, freezing and wet. And the food. Absolute shit. Not a decent cup of coffee since New Year's Eve. Leveling off at 2,000 meters, he leaned out the fuel-oil mixture, shoved the goggles up once more, and felt cold rain seep in under his collar. Nudging the stick left, he pushed against the left rudder bar and his boot slipped on the metal. The aircraft lurched to the left. Glancing at his watch, Garros did the math in his head and figured on another 45 minutes of flying. He'd been working on a gauge that would show how many liters of fuel remained. It was a needle on a round dial, like a clock face, attached to a float in the fuel tank, but he couldn't get it to work right. Yet. Squinting against the wind, Garros checked the machine gun. His mechanic had fashioned several metal straps and bolted them to the fuselage perpendicular to the cockpit. Then he'd welded two horseshoe-shaped brackets to the straps and mounted the gun. The gas-operated Hotchkiss fired 24 rounds from a metal strip inserted in the breech, and Garros had four such strips shoved into his boots, two in each leg. He'd have to load, aim, fly, and shoot, but he knew this would work. The attack would be unexpected, and this time he'd be the one laughing.